And the views and opinions expressed on A Gaza Corner are those of mine and my guests, and we have a guest tonight, and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of KALW, a public media. Before I get to our guest, I want to just say how upsetting it was to learn about how Manny's was vandalized. It was during the ICE protests. Manny's was vandalized with smashed windows, defacing all over the building things like the only good settler is a dead one and death to Israel is a promise and things like that on the walls. Vandalism is never the answer, never. Manny's is a community-minded space at the corner of 16th and Valencia in the Mission. KALW has done, I believe, a number of collaborations at Manny's. And it promotes dialogue. I mean, people with different opinions. And it promotes dialogue and belonging. I'm glad to report that Manny's put up a GoFundMe page just a few days ago to help repair the place and do some other things. It had a goal of $100,000. And I just looked at the GoFundMe page, and Harry will put it up on the playlist if he hasn't already. It's there. Stand with Manny, rebuild and resist hate. And already it's over double the goal, which has got to be heartwarming for Manny and the community that so loves that place, Manny's, which is a really wonderful community-minded space here in the Mission in San Francisco. A future Gaza Corner, probably soon, will cover Israel's bombing of Iran. On the very first day of the bombing, which was yesterday, 78 people were killed and more than 320 wounded in the Israeli attacks. From what I've read, it's assumed that the majority of the dead and wounded are likely civilians, although Iran lost many of their high-ranking military command generals, as well as a number of nuclear scientists. While the media is fixated on Israel's war on Iran, and it will be, obviously, and it is right now, I just want to remind you that 78 people killed is tragically a typical death toll on any given day in Gaza since October of 2023. And my fear is Israel's genocide in Gaza, ongoing genocide, will disappear from global attention as Israel accelerates its war on Iran, one that Iran seems defenseless to stop. I'd like to, for Gaza Corner tonight, bring in my my brother from another mother, I'm telling you. I love Jim Haber. Longtime tangential listener, has become a dear friend, and I admire you, Jim, for so many reasons, but you are, to me anyway, the consummate humanitarian and human rights activist. And in the news, locally, nationally, internationally, and I say the news of two Palestinians who were invited to speak at Kahila Synagogue in Piedmont, invited on a speaking tour in California, were denied entry at the airport despite having valid visas. Can't say we're shocked in this new world we're in, but it was horrible to find out about it. It was covered tremendously by the local press. KQED printed a release about it. The Chronicle did an extensive article, Mission Local, East Bay Times, etc. Arab media covered it, Middle East Eye, The New Arab, Israeli media covered it, Haaretz. Nationally, Axios covered it, The Intercept covered it. As of earlier today, NPR, Washington Post, The New York Times did not cover it. And right now we're going to have Jim Haber cover it. Jim is a member of Kehillah Synagogue, was involved in the planning of this. And why don't you take the mic, Jim, and tell us about how this whole thing came about.
Thank you, Dory, and you're very kind. I'm humbled by my friends and you and the global impact that you've had through Tangents and Gaza Corner, actually. So my kudos and gratitude to you. And thank you, friend.
Thank you, man.
So I met Eden Auda, the two Palestinians, my friends, in 2016 when I first went on a delegation with the Center for Jewish Nonviolence to the West Bank in Jerusalem. And I hadn't been there for 10 years and wanted to kind of restart my activism, or not restart, but renew that connection. I thought I needed to reconnect there and touch it again and get updated. And since then, I've been back 6 times to the Center for Jewish Nonviolence. I've always gone back to this village, Umocher, and this area, Masafer Yatin, south of Hebron, south of Bethlehem and Jerusalem. Spending time in Jerusalem and with my sister who lives on a kibbutz within Israel is always great. But my friends in Umocher were always really special to me. And they've gotten a bit of support from the Center for Jewish Nonviolence and other groups. And Kehillah Community Synagogue, Rabbi Bert Jacobson of blessed memory, started the Middle East Peace Committee in the Synagogue back in the 80s. Before October 23, but recently, before he passed away, he really, you know, and was really wanting to do reparations in some way, build beyond what he had done, which was first in the 80s to have a synagogue say we need to speak and represent, recognize Palestinian representatives that they choose, things like that. I don't think that the face-to-face group is reparations, really, but it's hopefully on that trajectory. But it's helped this village. Right now there's a campaign. They were coming here to help to try to raise money for their summer program. And they wanted to come and thank their supporters and meet their friends. Eid has been to the United States before. He's testified before Congress. His daughter has testified before Congress a couple times, brought by Donna Baranski Walker, in fact, and the Rebuilding Alliance, who was on last week or 2 weeks ago. Was it just last week that she was on, right?
Time flies, man.
Yeah, one of the last two. But so she helped bring them, or helped Auda get his visa. He had a one-time visa this time, and it seemed all good. He just got it 2 months ago. Eid was just here last fall. So it is weird. It is surprising that they weren't in, because the lawyers that deal with this sort of stuff say, you know, the way it was set up, so it's a little scary. Another humanitarian is coming later this month and speaking at Lakeshore Baptist Church, hopefully on June 28th, and touring around Rami Kader, who does art therapy with children and stuff, trauma relief and stuff. And I hope that he comes in better than my friends, but it was heartbreaking.
But Jim, just this past week, you know, Trump put into effect, whatever you want to call it, Muslim ban plus 2.0. And he's promising now another 38 countries. And maybe he includes, even though it's not officially part of the list, maybe he's now saying that Palestinians can't come into the country, although he hasn't said that. But that's what the action seems to represent at a time when this ban is in effect now as of this past week.
Yeah, right. Palestine is not on that list. And I don't think he's framing it as Muslim ban, because that was part of what kind of shot it down. And they're, you know, they're being more careful this time in their horrific whatevers, everything. It did definitely seem like it was definitely that they were Palestinian. And I do have something I would read from them. But first, just, you know, Auda, his English wasn't that good in 2016, but he's so articulate, you know? He learned really fast. He teaches English and he has three children. His wife, Hanat, his wife has a broken hand. And I was like, oh, you're going to be away. And it was scary after they did finally leave. And God, we were just grateful that they didn't get sent to, you know, CECOT in El Salvador or Guantanamo or Louisiana or something, you know, even worse. But then they were stuck in Doha and the missiles with Iran and the borders are closed. But somehow they have gotten to Amman where they have friends, you know. In fact, Donna is there now, and has been in contact and has been helping them. So, I do have a statement I would read from them. And Eid, he's an artist. His art has been he showed with Ai Weiwei in Berlin some years ago, things that he would make out of debris from destroyed buildings in the village. And he made very intricate crafts and, you know, moving machines and things like that. Very creative. And
So you have a statement from Eid right now?
I have a statement from the two of them that I would like to read here. Yes,
Yeah, come.
that. So, from Auda and Eid to our dear friends, what happened was deeply painful, far more than we ever expected. We never imagined that we would be turned back at the border after making all the arrangements. No one saw it coming. I had waited for this journey for so many years. I believed in the dream with all my heart. We had made it through 95% of the way. But in the very end, we weren't allowed to enter. The long hours of travel, the detainment, and then being sent back, it was all extremely difficult. There are no words to truly capture what we went through. At one point, I felt like I couldn't breathe, like I couldn't even stand up. I won't lie and say we've moved past it. We haven't, and perhaps we never fully will. It's simply beyond what anyone should have to bear. I pray that my dream will come really soon. But in the middle of all the darkness, there was one light, our dear friends, those who coordinated, who wrote, who called, who protested at the airport. You are a beautiful presence in our lives. Thank you for being that light. With love and gratitude, Auda and Eid.
What is the congregation at Kahila? What have they actually done to, make a difference in their lives and in the community where they live in the South Hebron Hills, Masafayata?
Well, different people have gone there for, you know, different periods of time. And we've raised some money, I would say mostly. Eid and Auda have spoken at our services over Zoom, including High Holy Days, to be a face in the of Palestinian life, a reality check in the community. I want more Palestinian speakers at the synagogue. I think Jewish life needs more Palestinian connection. But that's good. It's more than most, but it's short of where it needs to be.
Ben Linder, who I'm sure you know from J Street, Silicon Valley, he was quoted in one of the articles. There were many articles about this linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist at tangents.com. Just scroll down the playlist. And Ben said these were Palestinian activists and humanitarians who were here to bridge relations with the Jewish community. And for that to be a threat to this administration, I mean, these are the people you want in the country. It's just so perverse.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's an interesting thing. I mean, if you look at the flyer for the event that we're having at Kehillah, and at the Uptown Body and Fender, yeah, They've gotten a lot of support from Jewish communities over time, and they wanted to thank their Jewish friends, and they are Palestinians. And when the Palestinian community, I was really overwhelmed by the, because they didn't know any Palestinians here. They knew Jews here, and I wanted them to meet. But I also, you know, using the term activist, actually Eden Auda were hoping to, they were afraid of being tied with too much radicalism before they got in. I think it seems like it was just that they were Palestinian and not anything too much. So they did ask, evidently, the first day, a little more that I understand, the first day was harsher questioning, the second day was gentler. But it did seem like they asked some questions about Kehila.
And who was asking the questions?
I don't know. I mean, the CPB, the Customs and or CBP, but whoever, or I don't know, actually. I don't know who it was. But I just saw that little bit, that the second day was gentler. But still, it was all just absurd and hard and disappointing. And, you know, and it's racist as hell, you know.
You know, for people, I think a lot of people now know a lot more about Masa Fryata since the film No Other Land came out and won an Oscar, which, I mean, as horrible as things are right now in the world, that's something I don't think anyone could have imagined, you know, 5 years ago even, that a Palestinian, well, it was a Palestinian-Israeli collaboration, but still, about that subject matter to win an Oscar. And that's where they're from. And I think it might be constructive, Jim, for you to, if you can, because it's difficult, but to give a history of Masa Fryata and how it is that a area that has been inhabited by Palestinians well before the creation of a state of Israel is under extreme threat of forced expulsion, and given the legal premise, not an international legal premise, but the High Court of Israel has okayed, you know, back in like 3-4 years ago, gave the okay to rid Palestinians from Masa Fryata. Can you delve into that history a bit so folks can really grasp what's going on?
Sure, briefly, going back to like the early 1980s and Ariel Sharon, you know, surveying the South Hebron Hills. This is the south of the West Bank, just north of the border with the rest of where the 48, the Green Line, as they say, south of the West Bank there. And they called it a firing zone 918. And they designated, they wanted to take it to break up the movement patterns of some of the Bedouin communities down there, and to designate it. But the people that were living there continued to live there and, you know, fought it legally until, as you say, it was May 2023, maybe, or something like that. The High Court finally did rule against them. And since then, the army has gone in and done what, since it was called a training zone, a firing zone for training, you know, they're firing. I mean, this was before October 2023. Now it's a little different, but at first, before then, they were already going in with tanks and live and even shooting up schools and buildings and where people are living. And so, in my mind, you can't call it training and shoot up where people live. That's not training then. You're not training if it's real people, you know? But that's what they call it.
But it's been a longstanding strategic tool to call something, to convert it to a firing zone.
Yeah.
That's the premise they use to kick the Palestinians off their land. And when you forcibly transfer a population under occupation, That is a war crime. Of course, in Israel, they just ignore it, and it has no teeth. But it is absolutely contrary to international law.
Yeah, this is a little different than the closed military zones that they declare on a whim to move internationals out of the way. And just today in Umm Oher, where Eid and Auda live, settlers again were grazing their flocks, eating newly planted trees and grapes of the village of Umm Oher, and then they got violent with the Palestinian people trying to brush the animal away from the plants. This is the sort of thing that they're living with now since October 2023. It's much more intrusive. And the settlement right next to, and it, Umm Oher used to be unique a little bit in how close the settlement right next to it is. Usually it'd be like on the next hill. Carmel is right next to Umm Oher, and it's been amazing over the 10 years, the expansion of the settlement. And it connects up to Ma'on, another illegal outpost, which already seemed pretty big to me back in, but it was one of the illegal outposts. But now they're sort of connected, kind of like New York and Washington, D.C. used to be separate entities, and now it's all one light mass if you look at it from the sky. It's like looking at a map now, I didn't used to realize how close they were, Ma'on and Carmel, these two settlements. And Ma'on is in the firing zone. But the settlers, of course, they can fly their drones, whereas Palestinians couldn't have a drone and things like that. I mean, Umm Oher, they weren't even allowed in 2016 to run a cement mixer. You know, if they, you know, it was sometimes rebuilding and using equipment. I was surprised in 2024 we used some power tools for a while to break up rubble, to move it, to fake foundations for repaired buildings. But they take those tools too. But Masafer Yatta is the larger region, and there are like 12 or 15 villages within the firing zone that have specific kind of removal orders and specific fights. Umm Oher is on the edge, similar to Atuwani, which is where Basel is from, who was the main character in No Other Land, and I've certainly spent time there.
Let me ask you, Jim.
But let me just say, Bo Hamdan, the other director, and this is a scary thing, he got beat up worse than he'd ever been beat up before after he won the Oscar, and he got back there and a couple weeks later, and it's kind of like, geez, you know, hoping this thing might help, and then it's like, at what cost? So, you know, we were worried about Eid and Auda on this trip and how to frame promotion of it and not wanting to call them activists. Finally, circling back. Sorry for that long digression.
Even though it's in the headlines for some of these news outlets.
For some of them it was, and some it wasn't. This was, you know, the whole messaging and how to frame it, how public to be was a difficult, it was an interesting organizing conundrum in this case. You know?
And by the way, he was beaten up by settlers when he returned from gaining the Oscar, beaten up by settlers and then arrested by soldiers who beat him up even more. So he was beaten up by both settlers and the soldiers, according to him.
It's amazing how people survive these things.
And he said that the soldiers, as they were beating him up, kept saying the word Oscar, Oscar, Oscar. How about that? That's what I read.
But, you know, so the steadfast, you know, I'm amazed at the faith and the sumud or steadfastness of the Palestinian people. You know, they're teaching us love. And I mean, it's just, it's so upsetting to see what some of my Jewish brethren, my what is it, co-religionists say on the other side. It's so painful and upsetting.
I want to take a music break, a song that you suggested. You can tell us why, and then I want to move the conversation to Kahila itself and ask a couple of questions. So, you asked me to bring an album. Go ahead, or at least a song, and tell us what it is.
I just fell in love when I heard Benja Soul sing this at a Lawrence Livermore Lab, and it was written for Ray Charles years ago, and I can't remember the three writers of the name. None of Us Are Free, and I love the Solomon Burke version with the Blind Boys of Alabama a lot. My friend Adam Gottlieb sang it the other morning at the end of Torah study, and I love to hear it as often as can. I think it's something we all should take in, and it's kind of an anthem message for our time.
None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us are chained. None of us are free. And there are people still in darkness, and they just can't see the light. If you don't say it's wrong, then that says it's right.
Thank you, Jim.
I take a deep breath after that song.
Absolutely. You know,
and in the spirit of that song, Dory, mutual aid, and we're all in this together, and people who came out who didn't know Eden Auda at all but came out anyways, you know. And this weekend, people are stopping ICE raids in San Francisco down 478 Tehama, and they did it today, and there's calls for people to be out there tomorrow. Also, Bay Resistance and other groups under that umbrella, and you know, just to because I think ICE has offices there, and you know, the people have been called in for these unorthodox meetings. I think, like, you know, if you don't come in, then you lose. But if you come in, we might pick you up, you know, violently. You know, so it's, I think they, yeah, ICE sort of, I think, probably sees it as a game. But people are being called to go on down there tomorrow, 478 Tehama, whoever can.
What time?
It's like 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. So it's kind of an all day, 7:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. There's sort of shifts and stuff. I don't know. If you look, yeah, you find a Bay Resistance and you'll find it, June 15th, 478 Tehama.
Bayresistance.org?
If you just Google on Bay Resistance, you'll find it. I'm not probably, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, okay.
I'm looking at an image.
I should mention that was the late Solomon Burke, and it's an incredible album called Don't Give Up on Me. And we heard None of Us Are Free with the Blind Boys of Alabama, who popped into the recording studio, according to the liner notes, at the very last second. I think this was a one take. And what a one take, my goodness.
Wow, really? I didn't know. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I count on you, Dory. Even songs that aren't necessarily tangential, I expect the tangential from you about it. So thank you.
Yeah. It's a great choice. Thank you, Jim. Jim Haber is our guest as we are discussing the denial of entry into the country of two of Jim's friends who were invited to speak throughout California, and not just Kahila Synagogue, but at churches also.
And not just California, actually. They were going to speak in Seattle, Boston, D.C., and maybe New York. It wasn't even just California.
Well, I want to ask you, when I first moved to the Bay Area, I lived in Berkeley for a short time. And at that time, I was not aware of the history of Israel and how it was created. I didn't know, I probably didn't know anything about the Nakba. I was a member of Kahila Synagogue at that time. And this was just for a few years in the 1980s. And it's obviously a very different congregation now. And it's also moved. It's in Piedmont, and I'm really interested in your definition of Zionism and your definition of anti-Zionism, because from my understanding, Qahila might be the rare synagogue that has congregants who identify themselves as both Zionist and anti-Zionist.
Yeah, well, probably all synagogues have some of both. Or, yeah, some might be all more. There might be some that are that don't have any anti-Zionists, or very few, I suppose.
I'm sure there are.
Yeah, I guess.
And there also are synagogues, probably not too many, but you'd be on top of this, that are only anti-Zionist. Those never
there's
existed
like maybe
before.
Three. There's one in North Carolina, one in Chicago. I think Beit Tikkun now in Berkeley considers itself, and there might be one other one. But bless Michael Lerner of blessed memory. But I think Rabbi Kat Savis is taking it in a new trajectory and very vibrant.
But one of the issues I have is a lack of consensus on definition. Obviously, we're seeing that with, obviously, an extreme example is anti-Semitism. But are you comfortable defining Zionism? It's not my mother's Zionism. It's changed.
So I'm more comfortable defining anti-Semitism than the Zionism. I mean, I'll define Zionism the way the early Zionists define it. I guess that's how I define it.
Really?
And so that's why I define it as a settler colonial movement, and not really rooted in support for the Jewish people. They wanted the land, and they were willing to deal with anti-Semitic leaders. And, you know, the rabbi Samuel Aaron Tamaris, who was a Zionist from Poland, a little shtetl in Poland, but he went to a Zionist conference in like 1905 in London, and he left angry. He said, this is all about land. This is not about the spiritual benefit or the salvation of the Jewish people. And he turned against Zionism, became an ardent almost pacifist. He still believed Judaism and was special, and Jews had a special purpose, or certain supremacists didn't let go of, but really turned against Zionism. And I'm with Samuel Aaron Tamaris, at least on that, you know. But we all have special purpose, not just Jews. But so I kind of feel like, you know, Zionism's crimes predated World War II. It wasn't a response to World War II. So I define Zionism from that early problematic way it was. And then it became militarist and the whole terrorism thing. I mean, they blew up the King David Hotel and then became leaders of the country, you know, but somehow, I don't know.
You're talking Menachem Begin. But I would take it the other way.
Not only, yeah.
I would take it the other way. I would say that Zionism has morphed into the complete possession of historic Palestine for the Jews through any means necessary. And to me, Zionism is being acted out in real time on the ground by this government led by Netanyahu, Smotrich, and Ben-Gvir. They don't
That's
want
the contemporary reality of the Zionism that I was articulating. I mean, I think Jeff Halper talking about the settler colonial thing and his decolonizing Israel, liberating Palestine, the book, and the One Democratic State movement. You can see it from exactly what I was saying to exactly what you just said. It's the logical conclusion, or not conclusion, but you could follow the steps of the settler colonial playbook, calling the violent Palestinian, I'm not saying all Palestinians, I'm saying the Palestinians that take a violent means, armed resistance, calling them terrorists and all, you know, the vilification. That's just out of the settler colonial playbook.
Well, I mean, they were terrorists themselves, as you said, the King David Hotel and so many other examples of all the massacres that occurred from December of when the partition plan was announced, when, you know, Israel got 55% of historic Palestine and was 33% of the population, owned 6% of the land. And Israel at that point, and that wasn't Israel, the Zionists at that point did a land grab through many massacres before the State of Israel was created. This is like the previous 6 months before the creation of the State of Israel. So that is terrorism. But a people under occupation, I mean, it's enshrined in law. A people under occupation have a means to resist by any means necessary, including violence.
Yeah, I mean, they're not supposed to break international law in the way they commit their armed resistance.
Exactly.
They have a legal right to armed resistance.
Exactly. Let me just throw, you know, one other thing about Zionism, anti-Zionism. Is there any friction at Kahila? Any time there's like, you know, because to me, it's obviously there are different shades of Zionism. You know, my mother's, I'm sure if my mother was alive today, she would not be, you know, the Zionism of today. But she does believe that Israel, the Jews should have a homeland. I'm sure my mom would say that. But is there a friction in the congregation? You're on committees. How does that work out, or am I basically digging at nothing here?
I mean, no. I think leadership tries to keep us apart, or very tailored listening sessions are kind of the preferred way to deal with difficult topics publicly at Kahila. I think the leadership is really wanting to control the narrative right now. And so as a committee member, finding what we can do with the blessing of the leadership, it's trial and error, mostly good, but there is friction. But I don't really want to go into it too deeply. I think I've had lovely experiences lately, but I've also, there's been pain.
Yeah.
It's both ways. Because it is hard. I'm part of Tzedek Chicago, which is a anti-Zionist community. And Brant Rosen, their very, very wise rabbi who I adore, you know, I think he thinks now, there are some limits. You know, if you're a Jew who wants to pray and you think that what's going on in Gaza, you know that mothers and babies are being slaughtered and anybody, you know, people are being starved in ways that your enemies shouldn't be treated either. I want to do the good Palestinian, bad Palestinian thing. And if you sign off on that, how am I in community with you? How do I pray with you? I don't know. There are maybe limits that we find. There may be ways where we can't be in community together. And the whole rise of diasporism and the whole Zionism thing is also kind of anti-diasporist. So challenging that, and people are really trying to envision and create and are creating more rituals that acknowledge that we are a diaspora people and owning that and not saying we need to be locked into that or deny our connection to the land of the Torah, but to be where we are and pray where we are and know that.
All right, Jim, let's leave it there. Thanks for spending so much time tonight.
Thank you, everyone. I always want shorter Gaza Corners because I want more music. But I probably took more time than I should have. So thank you, everyone, for bearing with me. Love you, Dory.
That's always the dilemma, right?
Yep.
You do you,
Dory. Thank you.
But I would always, always be the first one to say it makes no sense to have Gaza Corner within Tangents. But that's the only place that I have, I would love to have it stand on its own elsewhere on the KLW schedule. That's no secret. And actually, behind the scenes, I'm still trying to see if that can happen. So, inshallah.
And, And inshallah, and thank you to KLW, because years ago, you know, KLW standing by Gaza Corner is very meaningful, as much as Kehillah having anti-Zionists. It's similar, maybe. I don't know. I just thank you, KALW. Everyone hit that donation button.
Amen. KALW.org. Thank you, Jim. And this is David Shivan and the Afro-Semitic Experience on Tangential Radio 91.7. This is Psalm 23, David Shivan and the Afro-Semitic Experience with cantor Hassan Alberto Mizrahi. The album is Yiskor, Music of Memory. And this is KALW, San Francisco, Bay Area. Thanks to Elaine. Thanks to Jim Haber. I'm Dori Stein. Good night.